Yes, that was Cher. Yeah, that was Cher I was playing yesterday. Dark Lady. That's right. What is it about Cher? I don't know. I used to watch the Sonny and Cher show when I was a kid. What is it about Cher? I don't know. I guess she's the ultimate long, cool woman in a black dress. I guess that's what it is. And that hair. You remember the Sonny and Cher show? She had that long black hair and she just kind of flicked it back every once in a while. I mean, I was 6 years old, but I got it, right? I got it. And what was that dweeb Sonny doing next to her? How did he land Cher? That little 4 foot dweeb with the mustache. How did he get a woman like that? The long, cool woman in the black dress. I don't get it. Hey, everybody, this is Martin Zender. Oh, speaking of Cher, I just realized the name of the king of Assyria. Now, this is a really sexy name, so I want you to hold on here. I'm about to really lay one on you here. The name of the king of Assyria that I'm speaking about, teaching about in Isaiah chapter 10 is, you ready for this? All right, this guy should have his own television show. This is a winner of a name. I told you it had many, many, many consonants. I mean, syllables. Yeah, well, true, it's got consonants as well, but here it is. Tiglath-Pileser the First. Tiglath-Pileser. Did you get that? Now, I don't know if I'm not guaranteeing the pronunciation. Tiglath, I think I can guarantee that. T-I-G-L-A-T-H. How else do you pronounce that? Tiglath. But it's the Pileser. It could be Pilesar. P-I-L-E-S-A-R. Sounds like a beer. Some kind of beer. Oh, that's Pilsner. Oh, sorry. Anyway, I think it's Pileser. That's the way I'm going to say it. Anyway, this is the king of Assyria that we've been talking about in Isaiah chapter 10. Now, you say to me, Martin, God would never cause a heathen king to go to war against his own people. Oh, no? Well, that's exactly what he did. Read Isaiah chapter 10 on your own. Not one translation, not even the new incoherent version, has been able to screw up this passage. God himself inspires this man to go against his people. Oh, there's a verse that's coming into my head right now. I think it's Isaiah. No, wait a minute. Psalm 105:25, I think. And that says that God turned their hearts to hate his people. Now, it's speaking in the context of the Egyptians. So here's a backup verse for you. I'll check that verse to make sure that's right. I don't have my Hebrew scriptures up here right now. But God turned the heart of the Egyptians to hate his people. Why is he doing this? It's like, because this is his favored nation. Now, if I was a favored nation, I would say, time out, could you stop favoring us for a while? This hurts. Well, we know from Hebrews 12, God disciplines those he loves, and if he doesn't discipline you, then you're a bastard and not a son. All right, that's a scriptural word, bastard. I didn't throw that in there just because I'm obstinate. All right, now, God judges the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria. Now we're getting into the nuts and bolts of this. I told you that the king of Assyria had no clue that he was being used by God, and he didn't. And so the question I always get, and it's amazing really, because this question really tells me that people don't read Romans chapter 9. Some people, thank God, do read Romans chapter 9. It's an amazing passage of scripture dealing with the sovereignty of God. People say, Martin, why does God judge the people he makes hard? This is how they say it. How can God judge people when he himself makes them do what they do? Now, I immediately rejoice when someone asks this question in a way, because at least they've understood Paul's argument. Paul's point in the early part of Romans chapter 9 is that God is the potter, we're the clay. He makes some vessels for honor, some vessels for dishonor. So if you grasp that, you can only raise this objection if you grasp that point. And I mentioned that to you a couple shows ago. But I want to repeat it because it's important. The fact that this protest arises proves that the protester has grasped the point that God makes people hard. Otherwise, we would understand why God judges people like Pharaoh. It's because Pharaoh's an idiot. Pharaoh hardened his own heart. That's why we're judging him. He's dumb. But that's not the case. He might be dumb, but God made him dumb. In fact, God gave an entire nation, the nation of Israel, a spirit of stupor. So, at least the people who ask this question understand the truth that God does indeed make people what they do. And I hope you're there. A lot of people aren't. I didn't dream this up. This is God's truth. Now, listen to this I'm going to quote this from The Message. I'm going to quote Romans 9:11 from The Message. Now, normally, I don't like these paraphrases. I'm a literal guy. I like to know what God said, but sometimes these paraphrases are really great. And as many of you know, I quoted extensively from The Message in The First Idiot in Heaven when accuracy was, you know, not being compromised. Now, listen to this. From The Message, Romans 9:11, quote, God's purpose is not a hit or miss thing dependent on what we do or don't do, but a sure thing determined by his decision flowing steadily from his initiative, unquote. Isn't that great? God's purpose is not a hit or miss thing depending on what we do. I don't know what is not to like about the sovereignty of God. What's not to like about it? It's not hit or miss. It's not dependent on what we do. What if it was dependent on what we do? That would be absolutely frightening. I'd be under so much pressure all day. But I'm not, because God's doing everything according to his will, determined by, quote, his decision flowing steadily from his initiative. It is God's decision that causes things to happen, not ours. He decides what he's going to do, and this decision, his initiative, flows through him. Watch this. It flows through him into the veins and sinews and arteries of beings created for the purpose of enacting his will. One of these beings was Tiglath-Pileser, who had no idea that the will of God was flowing through his veins, sinews, and arteries. But it was a sure thing. Now, this is the thing. Now, here's the classic argument again. And I'm going to read the classic argument from The Message, because some of you may be thinking this very thing. And I'm going to talk you out of it by the end of this show. At least I'm going to answer the question. Again, I admire you for objecting, because at least you understand that God makes vessels of honor and dishonor. Now, Paul says in Romans 9:19 from The Message, are you going to object? So how can God blame us for anything, since he's in charge of everything? End quote. Isn't that beautiful? I'm going to repeat it. How can God blame us for anything, since he's in charge of everything? I like it. Since he's in charge of everything. That's a pretty straightforward question, isn't it? And the answer is just as straightforward. Here's the answer in the context. Romans 9:19. This is Paul. And the weird thing is, Paul really doesn't answer the question. All right, here's what Paul says in The Message. Who in the world do you think you are to second guess God? Do you for one moment suppose any of us knows enough to call God into question? Ooh, that hurts. That hurts. Basically, what God's saying is, who do you think you are questioning me? Paul says in Romans chapter 3, if God doesn't judge those who he makes do what they do, then God can't judge the world. But God does judge the world, and I'm going to get to the key, is that he judges because the people involved are ignorant. He judges them according to their heart. So now we know this. We know this much. We're not to call God into question, even though, all right, I'm answering this question. I'm really being audacious here. Kids, don't try this at home. What I'm going to do is answer Paul's question here. The Apostle Paul himself doesn't answer it in the context, but I, Martin Zender, am taking a huge risk here, but I'm a trained professional, and you're going to get hurt if you try something like this at home to answer this question that Paul doesn't answer. And here it is. In Isaiah chapter 10, God does explain this strange principle to us, and he uses the king of Assyria. What strange principle? That God judges people who he hardens. He explains this strange principle in Isaiah chapter 10 using the king of Assyria to do it. Here's the answer. You ready? I feel like I need a drum roll. Fortunately, I'm an ex-drummer. God judges people in accord with what they think they're doing. In accord with what they think they're doing. That is, God judges their hearts. And here it is in Isaiah 10, 12, and 13. I'm reading this from, I think this is a concordant version of the Old Testament. I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the pomp of his haughtiness. You see, it's the arrogant heart. That's the answer to Paul's question in Romans 9:19. How can God blame us for anything, since he's in charge of everything? Because he's going to judge in accord with the heart, with what the king of Assyria thought he was doing. Because as I told you yesterday, the king of Assyria didn't know he was fulfilling God's will. Now, I'll punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the pomp of his haughtiness. For he has said, this is the clue, he has said, quote, by the power of my hand, by my wisdom, I did this, for I have understanding. Sorry, king of Assyria, that's wrong. Johnny, tell him what he's won. You have won an all-expense-paid trip to the Lake of Fire. Congratulations, king of Assyria. But first, we're going to judge you in accord with the great white throne. He's going to get a knowledge that it was God all along. But he's going to be judged in according to what he was thinking on the day that he decided to go up against Israel. It's for his benefit. God will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria. Now, again, this is for his good. The king of Assyria will not be able to say to God. This is what he won't be able to say to God. And I'm including Pharaoh in this too. Now, I don't know which accent to use. I have an accent for the king of Assyria, which is something like this. And I have an accent for Pharaoh. He talks like an Englishman, Pharaoh does. I'm not sure who to take here, the king of Assyria or Pharaoh. I'm going to take the king of Assyria. The king of Assyria will not be able to say to God, you can't judge me because you made me do what I did. That's what he's going to say. First sentence, how can you judge me because you made me do what I did? And God's going to yawn and say, yeah, I heard that back in Romans chapter 9. And this is the answer. God's going to say, I know I made you do what you did. That's not the point. The point is that what you thought you were doing at the time, that is, when you thought you were acting independently of me, that's what made you a vain person in your own heart. And it made you miserable, right? Weren't you miserable back then? Yeah, I have to admit I was miserable. I had all kinds of stomach problems. I had indigestion. I did not have a Posturepedic mattress. And I was very grouchy. And I just woke up one day and I wanted to go up against Israel. I need to be delivered from my own self-righteousness. And God's going to say, well, I'm here to do that. I'm here to do that. I wanted you to feel the burden of vanity. You know that? Okay. Because now I'm going to deliver you from your burden of vanity. Okay, that sounds pretty good. Is this going to hurt? It might hurt a little bit. All right, well, go ahead. I'm ready for it. Because I'm the king of Assyria. I'm Tiglath-Pileser, and I can take anything. So God is going to judge him, and it's going to be righteous because the throne is white, and Tiglath-Pileser is going to learn by contrast. He's going to learn by contrast, the contrast of self-righteousness versus the love of God versus being delivered of all confidence in self. We've been delivered of that. You know how good it feels to finally give up and to realize that the world doesn't depend on you and God doesn't wait for your every decision. God is not hamstrung by your devotion to him or your daily exercise of morality. No, it's all of him. You remember how good that felt? You know how good it feels to drink a glass of wine and to relax and to realize that God's in control of the universe? All right. Old Tiggy, Tiglath, Tiggy, I call him. He's going to realize that at the Great White Throne. And it's going to be a great day for him when he at last realizes the sovereignty of God. And he's going to learn by contrast that God was his God all along. And God's going to be judging him for his own good. And thus, God judges the heart of the entire world for its own good.